And then I ask you to please help me welcome Fernando M. from LA as our speaker tonight.
He's taping it.
Okay, it's not on. Good evening, everybody. My name is Fernando. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank Lee for inviting me and me and the wife and our little dog and came all the way to say hi to you guys and share my experience, strength, and hope. My sobriety date is May 11, 1993. My home group is in San Diego because at one time I was into poor me. And I made the mistake of asking some guy that is supposed to be a really, really good guy, and he was, to be my sponsor. And his best suggestion was that, why don't you drive 100 miles to come to my meeting, you know? And I was like, how the hell would that help me, you know? And he said, don't come alone, bring somebody with you. So I guess that was the solution. I brought somebody every week, and we talk all the way down there, and we talk all the way back, and we talk during the meeting, and in about a month, I forgot my problem. And now I have other people that are telling me their problems. And I enjoy listening to other people's problem than try to solve my own problem. And by leaving my problems alone, somehow my problem got solved, you know? So I'm forever grateful to this man. Many in the rooms know him. He passed a few years back, and his name is Kip Collins. And I have somebody else in my life. And it's working really well. But what I would like to tell you about is that 26 years ago, I'm a whole different person, you know. Just the fact that on May 9th, 1993, which happens to be Mother's Day on a Sunday, I was in the city of Santa Rosa, which is about an hour north of San Francisco. I came to on a park bench, and I was angry. Because these people in this park were disturbing my sleep, you know? I didn't know it was Mother's Day. They were playing guitar, dogs were chasing Frisbee, and people were noisy, and I just like, what is going on, you know? And somehow, at that moment, around 10 o'clock in the morning, my tears from my eyes seems to clear the window to my soul, and I was able to see out for a moment. What I saw was the fact that, without a doubt, on that morning, I knew that I was an alcoholic. Because I knew what an alcoholic was since I was 16 years old. An alcoholic is my father, who would pass out drunk in a middle-class, nice neighborhood called Bixby Node in Long Beach. And all the neighbors would be outside. My crazy mother would call the paramedics, fire department, and everybody was, like, seemingly laughing at my family. And somewhere in that moment, I swear to God that I will never be like him. That's embarrassing. But in the 20 years after that, all along, little by little, because I was doing different things, I never thought that I was like him until this morning on May 9th, 1993. Without a doubt that this was the thought that got me connected. I too was drunk in public. That was it, you know? So like, oh my God, I was running away from this image of my father and I end up exactly like him. Unfortunately, I was not good with God. I knew I needed divine intervention in my life, but I have a lot of anger at the God of my understanding at that time. But I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't go to God, so I went to a psychic instead. And the psychic in a little ad promised that for $5, she was going to give me the answer to all my problem, you know? So I showed up and she needed 10. And then after she heard my story, she gave me back my money. Seriously, this is for real. She said, I needed it more than she does. She said, you need to get out of town, you know? And so as an alcoholic, getting out of town is always a good idea. You know, people were always after me, you know, they were trying to kill me or something, you know? So I didn't have to double check with her. I said, I'm getting out of town. That's the best idea. So I round up that 10 bucks and other money I collected around, and I just went to the Greyhound bus. I look up on the board and the guy says, son, where do you want to go? And somehow I feel like I'm a gangster that morning. I says, Santana, you know. Never been to Santa Ana, didn't know what the hell was going on in Santa Ana, but I want to go to Santa Ana. And the money that I have exactly was buy that ticket to Santa Ana. And the other mistake was that, I don't know any of you have been on a Greyhound bus. From Santa Rosa to Santa Ana takes 18 hours because they stop at every town you never heard of, you know? It's like, not even the gas station, just in the middle of nowhere. They would just stop and they'd say, why are we stopping? We're the flat tires. They know this is a regular Greyhound bus stop, you know? So which created this problem? The more they stop, the more I'm thinking like, what the hell are you gonna do when you get to Santa Ana? Everything you own fits in a little plastic bag. And you have no money, you don't know anybody. And that was a time when Fernando could not even make a collect call and expect somebody to accept it. This is what my thinking and my actions have got me to be. But right when I get to Ventura, all of a sudden, a bright idea came up. And there was this guy that owns a furniture store, and I know it's a weekday, so he will be there. And I happen to remember the number. It's one of those guys that I didn't really burn too much because in my career of alcoholism, I'm the kind of person that burned you once, apologize sincerely, come back and burn you again, you know. So by the time you get done with me, you do not want to see me ever at all. So I called him up and he says, what are you happening with you? I said, I'm going to be rolling in the Greyhound bus station. He said, I'll come pick you up. You know, I said, okay, thank you. So he picked me up, took me to a restaurant, fed me, offered me a job, gave me some money, told me I had a place to stay. And I was like, wow, God's working good in my life. What else can I help you with, you know? But then he said one thing that was the strangest thing I've ever heard from another human being. He said, you're an alcoholic. You need to go to a meeting tonight, you know, AA meeting. I said, I didn't know you were an alcoholic. How did you come up with this? He said, I'm not an alcoholic. My wife is. So she's going to come pick you up and take you there. I didn't know his wife was an alcoholic. You know, I worked for him for about a year or two. And so 6 o'clock, she came by, took me to Santa Ana Alano Club. And I walked in. I can tell you this. I was not impressed, you know. Everybody was smoking and everybody was talking at the same time and nobody was listening, you know. And I made my first mistake in AA. I sat down on the couch at this club and I immediately hit bottom. It seems like the couch didn't have any springs in it, you know, boom. They got the donations from the Salvation Army when they couldn't get rid of it, you know. And God, you know, you guys are the nosiest, you know, rudest people have ever met, you know. People would just come up, you know, and I was there like 5 minutes and it says, what step are you on? You know, like, well, what are you talking about? I don't know. I'm not a joiner, so, you know, leave me alone, you know. And then another guy will come up and says, who's your sponsor? You know, like, I don't know. He told me not to tell anybody. Keep it between me and him. Now, I'm a fast learner. You know, you can tell by now. I'm one of these smart guys that's too smart for my own good. And I really quickly realized, you know, that you better find somebody to be your sponsor. But he doesn't know that you have pointed him out as your sponsor. So I look around the room and I saw an old guy and I said, he's my sponsor. And immediately, seems like you became his property. Everybody just stepped back away from you. And he says, oh, you're working with John. He's such a good sponsor. Don't tell John about that, okay? And then, you know, after the meeting, I realized that the wife told me, I'm going to have to catch a ride home somewhere. So I was asking around for a ride, and I made my second mistake in AA. So if you're new, do not ask any of these people for a ride home. There's some kind of like unwritten commitment that if you catch a ride from these people, you have just given them permission to talk your head off, you know? I was like 10 minutes from the club. It took this guy 45 minutes to take me home, you know? He told me about his first wife, second wife, third wife. We stopped by Ralph's, we stopped by Walgreens, and he just talk and talk and talk. And then pretty soon I was like starting to get worried. I realized that my house is like, you know, this sober living anyway. My house was like close by And then I was ready to go, you know, we stopped at a red light and I was ready to go boat. And then, and I looked down at my door handle and there was no handle. It's like Jeffrey Dahmer in the room, you know, like, oh my God, you know, he's gonna eat me and kill me. And that was my first experience in AA. And then, of course, you know, things happen. You know, I'm a new guy, you know, I'm like, you know, I want to know who's available, who's dating who, who's cute, who's, you know, somebody that I can talk to, you know, because I'm lonely, you know. And I went to the get some coffee, and then I went to the restroom. And when I come back, everybody start clapping. And they say, Fernando, we just elected you GSR, you know, like. And they ran no campaign, made no promises, and they told me I won it by a landslide, you know. Yeah, don't leave the room, you know, things happen when you're not here. And and then I went to this sober living place. Oh my God, I didn't know you could put 12 people in a 2-bedroom, you know. And and one of these things that happened today, I knew it's a regular thing. They say, oh, the guy went out, you know. But this is 1993. In the living room of this sober living, we have this majestic solid oak entertainment center. Right in the middle of it, we have a solid oak 27-inch Zenith color television that weighs about 100 pounds. And when that guy got out or went out, somehow he was like Kung Fu. He grabbed this thing and he ran out with the TV. And the next morning, the house manager was crazy. How did he do that, you know? So then he said, don't worry, well, as soon as Circuit City have a sale, we'll get you another brand new one. But in the meantime, we got a 19-inch black and white television. It's still good, you know? So he began to strap everything in the house. The payphone got a strap, the microwave got a strap, you know? The refrigerator got a strap, and if you didn't move around fast enough, you got a strap too, you know? And then a couple of days later, as predicted in the doctor's opinion, when an alcoholic comes out from his spree, he appears remorseful. So this guy was knocking the door and he's begging to be let in again. He's sorry what I have done, and they didn't know what to do. And you know, the smartest guy in the room, me, I've been to 6 AA meeting, I know what to do. What you do is that you sit around a circle, you hold hands, you pray, you talk about it, and then you make the decision, and that's called a group conscience. So they say, oh yeah, we heard of that. So we did that, and of course we agree that every alcoholic deserves a second chance. We're all sick, you know, so we should let him back in and welcome the brother man. And no sooner we brought him back, he went out again with the black and white TV, you know. That was my experience, and I lived there for a whole year. I thought Fernando is so smart and so able that I could put together $500 and get me one of those alcoholic car and I'll be out of there in 30 days, you know? And I end up there living there for a whole year. And if you don't know what an alcoholic car is, I tell you, when you buy it, only thing the guy will tell you is that it runs. It doesn't tell you that it takes a quarter oil every hour on the hour. Doesn't tell you that in order to get in the driver's seat, you gotta climb into the passenger side. The whole thing is holed up by duct tape, you know? But it runs, you know, so yeah, I got, you know, I figured I could get one of those, no problem, you know. And the humility was that I had to take a bus living in this place for a whole year. And today I'm grateful for that. It's interesting how hindsight, you look at the same thing and a whole different opinion. Hindsight I knew is that I was a Maserati. I go 200 miles all the time, you know. And when I go 200 miles an hour all the time, sooner or later, I will crash. God made it possible to slow me all the way down. And on the bus, I can read on the bus. I can kind of think about, you know, what my life has become and what I need to do and how did I get myself here and how am I able to follow the directions of somebody that I begin to trust and go somewhere. And so, but y'all know I'm not really from Santa Ana. I'm not really from, you know, Santa Rosa. By now, you all know that, you know, they introduced me as Fernando, but I got a funky accent, and you're not even sure if I'm Mexican, you know. And many of the people think that I'm either Filipino or something, you know. And I'll tell you, I'm actually Chinese Portuguese. I was born in this place called Macau, which today is the Las Vegas of the Orient. And Macau is number one gambling capital of the world. Las Vegas, which we are so impressed with, is number three now, because a couple of years ago, Singapore was legalized gambling, and you know how the Asians are, you know, they shot up to number two. So if Americans wants to be number one again, we better start gambling again, okay? And in this little 2.2 miles place, it seems to me, and it is the truth at the time, that 97% of the people there were Chinese and 3% of the people were the ruling party, because it was a Portuguese colony. They run the place and they were Portuguese. And I realized early on that I'm not, you know, full blood anything. I'm not Portuguese, I'm not Chinese. I've always felt like a giraffe in a herd of horses. I look like a horse, I run like a horse, but my neck is way too long. I'm not a horse, you know? And they told me the story of my mother dropping me off at this convent when I was 6 months old, and she gave me up for adoption because in those days, my mother was considered not a very proper lady, let's put it that way, because she dated outside of her race, and I was a forbidden product, you know, of that generation. And it was very shameful. And it was a Catholic convent, and so I was not well received, other than they say, okay, you know, you're still a child of God or something, and they kept me, you know. And so I had a good education, and but this, you know, I just my perception. I don't want to, you know, rude to anybody else in their religion. But I grew up is that this Catholic thing was like, to me, was really, really hard, because you don't have to do anything. All you have to do, think about it, you're going to hell, you know. And I knew I was going to hell since I was 7 years old, you know. And but I loved the wine and wafer buffet they have every morning, you know. That was really good, you know. And it's like I was like growing up with just like in a foreign world, because, you know, I look at on the wall and they have these paintings of Jesus, and in China, by the way, Jesus don't look like Brad Pitt. It looked more like Bruce Lee, you know. And but I look at myself, I'm not a Brad Pitt, and I'm definitely not Bruce Lee. So I don't fit, I don't belong, you know. And that's when I begin to have problem with this God, was that how hard is it for God, seriously, to find two Chinese people or two Portuguese people and say, go at it, you know. He can't even pick my parents correctly. Because, you know, if it's up to me, I would make sure they're of the same race, you know. And then I grew up with no parents, you know. What's up with that? Everybody else have at least one parent, you know. What did I do that was so wrong, you know? Why is he constantly punishing me? And why am I so poor, you know? And seriously, China at the time was a very poor place. Even the bishop was poor, you know. And we were so poor that our local 99-cent store have a layaway program. That's how poor we were, you know. And you know, but other than that, I was fed, I was taken care of. Nothing really bad happened to me. And I would consider myself having a decent childhood. And until when I was about 14 years old. One day, this priest came by and says, Fernando, there's a couple from America. They were looking a whole bunch of photos. And when they came to yours, they stopped. They liked your picture. And they want to adopt you. And they want to take you to America. You know, and I'm like, okay, maybe God just kind of slow. You know, I know sooner or later he'll get around to me when he get done with Iran or Iraq. And then he say, oh, today I have half an hour. Let me look at Fernando's file, you know. And so I said, like, okay, you know, I'm plugged out of this place. I'm going to, you know, I mean, I heard of America from Beach Boys, Hollywood, you know, Sunset Boulevard, right? And they told me that the town that I'm going to is a beautiful town called Long Beach, you know. I mean, I'm like 14 years old, never been out of China. Don't Long Beach sound like a place where they have a sandy golden beach that is so long it goes from here to eternity? Long Beach. I showed up here and find out quickly that Long Beach don't even have a beach. Long Beach got a shipyard. What kind of a, you know, false advertising do you guys get? You know, like, and I say, where's the beach? They say, go up to El Redondo. Where's the beach? Go down to Seal Beach. I say, what about Long Beach? Long Beach ain't got no beach. You know, like, okay. So they sent me to high school. That's when I met my people. I was standing in the bus stop waiting for the bus, and a Volkswagen van drove up, and it seems like it took 10 minutes before the sliding door slide open. Big cloud of smoke come out of there. And this guy with a bandana stick his head out. You know, this is 1970 now. Everybody's first name is Dude. You call your mom Dude. You know, hey Dude, what's for dinner? You know. So he stick his head out and say, Dude, you want to ride, you know? I say, sure, you know, better than the bus. So I hop in that van and didn't take them but 2 minutes. I say, you ain't from around here, are you? You know, I said, no, I'm, you know. I say, okay, China boy, you need to be Americanized. I say, I love to be Americanized. What do I have to do? They say, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I'm ready for sex, you know. They say, no, we do it backwards. Let's just do rock and roll first, you know. I say, I can wait, you know, rock and roll is good. You know, I thought it was like, you know, the old-fashioned, what I saw on TV, you know, like the old Beatles, they just stand there and like this. No, they took me to a band from San Francisco and my very first rock concert, and this band is called The Tubes, and the number one hit at the time was White Punks on Dope, you know. Like, I never look back, you know. These people introduced me to what I call the, you know, golden nectar of the gods, you know. I mean, imagine when I first saw the name on this bottle, it says Southern Comfort. You're like, you know, nothing but good things gonna happen from this, you know. And then they also introduced me to this other, you know, nectar of the gods. You know, they call it Wild Turkey. And I know for sure, if you're drinking Wild Turkey, it's going to be wild, you know. It got so wild that I didn't remember half the things that ever happened. I knew I was at the very first Grand Prix of Long Beach. I don't remember it. But I still have the wristband and all that, you know. And all my friends told me, Fernando, you were funny, you know. He had a great time, and my friends wouldn't lie to me, right? You know, so I remember I went to like the Van Halen concert, second row at the Fabulous Forum. I don't remember, but I still have the ticket stub to prove that I was there. So through a series of events that I don't remember, but everybody was there, told me that I had a great time. I went on and on and on and on, and you know, like I said, I didn't want to be just alcoholic at the time. I was afraid to become my father. So I did a lot of things, you know, and hang out with a lot of weird, crazy people. My roommates at the time, just to give you an idea, and my wife who's here tonight, met every one of them. So these are real people. First guy, first roommate, his nickname is Blackout. You know, I don't have to tell you. Yeah, his name is Blackout. Okay, so second guy, you know, his name is Torch, you know. I came home from work one day, you know, fire department met him, you know, the ambulance were out there, and I walk in the living room, the place where the couch used to be, it's just a black spot against the wall, you know. I said, what happened, you know? He said, you know, I was doing my thing, and my elbow knocked the flame and the fluid, and, you know, the whole thing just went up. So I guess he was doing Richard Pryor long before I heard of Richard Pryor, you know. And the third guy, his name was Bandit. Bandit is a real alcoholic. Bandit went to rob the local liquor store that he goes to at least twice a day without a face mask, you know. He walks up to the guy that hands him the half a pint every time and just say, give me all your money. And so, of course, the guy pick up the phone and call the cops, you know, Costa Mesa PD, and say, of course I can recognize him. I know exactly where he lives, you know. So they just pick him up, you know. And here we are, the four of us crazy guys, trying to be best friend with this girl who we call Toast. don't get ahead of me. Toast used to drive a Pinto, okay? Yeah, you know. And if you didn't know, some of you new people, the Pinto is famous for blowing up, you know. And she got a little accident, and she got about $1 million, and we were really trying to help her spend most of it, you know. And we were crazy. We went everywhere, and we did all kinds of crazy things. And then we went on this place where we go from town to town, and we were professional liars, and we were collecting money, and it's just a big mess. But it was exciting for a little while, and then it becomes a daily grind. And I was sharing with Carver. I don't know where he is, but Carver, right over there. Yeah, and Carver relate to it, is that, you know, the place where you come to when you need $300 each and every day, there ain't no Saturday, there ain't no Sunday, there ain't no New Year's Day, it become something of a prison that you know you built yourself, you know. And then a lot of times is that, you know, by then, it's not like I never heard of AA. Of course I heard of AA. But AA at the time is something completely different from what I know of it today. I thought AA was a, you know, Bermuda Triangle of missing people. You know, that's what I thought it was. Because we have this guy rock solid, John, you know. John was like, you know, you go to his house 24/7. He always got alcohol. He's always got other party favors. And he never disappoint. And then one day, and they always whisper, I don't know why, they say, have you heard John went to AA? And nobody have ever seen John ever again, you know. John just disappeared, you know. You call John's mom's house, where he has been for 30 years. John's mom says, we don't know where he went. He's not around anymore. We went to Lucky John's, the pool hall, where he hangs out every day to make his living. You know, he's a really good pool shooter. They said, we haven't seen John. No, John went to AA, you know. And then every other place. John at the time has 3 pages. Now I'm bringing some memories, right? You know, in those days, when you have 3 pages, you are somebody really, really important. And it's all codes, you know. Those are like, we didn't have cell phone then. We just have pages. And none of the pages work anymore. So we don't know what happened to John, except that we know John went to AA. So do I want to go AA? Hell no, I don't want to go AA. You know, it's like joining a cult or something and nobody ever heard of you again. You know, and so we just went on this road and doing all kinds of crazy things. And oftentimes, you know, as we all have done in chapter 3, we'd say we would stop. And then, unfortunately, it always starts again, you know. And I didn't know that it's not about the stopping, it's about staying stopped. I'll tell you this, one time I was so impressed, you know, I stopped using cocaine 3 times in 1 day. I'm still impressed with that fact, you know, that... and just like, you know, until literally, you know, I have a moment of, clarity, and I came to on this park bench, and I realized that the solution was 2 answers. One is to, you know, hurt myself bad enough, and the other one would probably have to surrender to a divine intervention. I chose the divine intervention part. And it didn't go directly. God didn't have a bright light come down on me. But I believe perfectly that through a series of different people in the right place, I end up in the right place. And today, my understanding is completely different. Because for a person that never felt love, I never met my real parents. You know, everybody have Mother's Day tomorrow night. You know, tomorrow. Everybody have Father's Day in another month. I don't have that, you know. So I've always felt that so unloved, so alone, until God see fit for me to arrive in a room like this. And I realized in a room like this that each and every one of you have a special gift. And that gift is how to love an alcoholic into wellness. So today, instead of having 1 or 2 people loving me, I have 50, I have 100, I have 200, I have 500 people doing this their little bit. But combined, it is more than what my parents could have loved me. So I felt love. And many of the father figures, mother figures, people that I, you know, surrender myself to and follow their directions, they have been my parent. They have watched me grow, you know. And the second thing is that for somebody that really never have a family, God see it fit that brought me to a family, the largest family in the world. Because in a room like this, we all have different first name, but we all have the same last name. We have Lee alcoholic, we have Pam alcoholic, I'm Fernando alcoholic. We all have different first name, but we all have the same last name. Once in a while, we got those people from the other tribe. they are something and that, you know, and those people need to put $2 in the basket, right? Just an opinion. But we love them just the same, you know. But I'm in the largest family in the world, you know, and you'd be surprised that even people that are not part of this program take their hand out and reach out to me, like the person that picked me up from that Greyhound bus station. Several years ago, I went to Madrid, you know, and they told me, oh, there's a great English speaking meeting. And I called, the number is supposed to be the AA central office. Call, nobody answer, call, nobody answer, call, nobody answer. Like, hell, I don't need the central office to tell me. I look it up in a phone book, I found their address. So I hop into a taxi and I show the guy the piece of paper. He took me to a place. And when I got there and come out the door, I knew somehow something is wrong. I didn't see 4, 5, or 10 people smoking out there. I don't know, this ain't don't look right. Yeah. Like when I cruise in here, the front of this church didn't look right. You know, it was just empty. So, but if you go in the back, and I thought, okay, maybe these people are in the back, you know. So I walked down this dark hallway, and it was dark, except at the very last office or home, or door was open and the light was on, and an old Spanish man was in there. So I walked by and I looked at him, kind of like maybe he can help me, you know. And he just say, ah. And I didn't know what was that. And so he looked at me again and he says, ah. You know, I saw like Affleck commercial, you know. And then he decided maybe I don't speak Spanish, you know, which I do not. I mean, speak a little bit. So he ran out of the room, he grabbed me by the hand, ran me all the way back out the door, and he pointed across the street. It's the same number, 214 or something like that, and he pointed to there, and he says, ah-ah. Finally it hit on me, A-A in Spanish is ah-ah, you know? So all I'm trying to tell you is that there's a guy in Spain that is not a pro part of this program, is doing really good 12-step work, you know, okay? And then, you know, I began to surround myself with this guy who I call a sponsor, older gentleman that who's a father figure to me. And, you know, these guys are tough, you know. They always say, read the book, you know. So I didn't know anything about the book. You know, I read the book and it says, you know, lack of power. What is that? You know, I don't know what that is. They say, read the book, you know. I say, okay. I say, I don't know, I don't know. So they say, come up with it, you know, and I thought, okay, I'm a car guy. I know what lack of power is. If I left the lights on too long, the battery went dead, now I don't have any power, you know. But then, of course, you know, if I have a car, I can push start it, you know. And so if I get a bunch of Al-Anons and let them know that Fernando just need a little help and I'll be out of your way, okay, just a little push. And they believe in me, they supported me. You know how Al-Anon, they're always very trusting, right? So they get behind me, they start pushing my car, and I jump in, I thought I popped the clutch, and there's no clutch, you know. But hell, I'm just plopping something, and the car won't start, you know. So I told my sponsor, I said, you know, I can't get the car started, you know. I don't have power, but I can't get the car started. He said, read the book. I said, I read the book. He said, didn't you read the book that we are different from our fellows? I say, what does that mean? It says, if you are a car, you have a different transmission than all the other people. The other people have regular transmission, standard transmission. What you have is an automatic transmission. And it makes sense because everything Fernando always dream of is automatic, you know? Like things just magically appear. That's how I like it, you know? And then saying, you know, when you have an automatic transmission, you need automatic transmission fluid. Bottle with a capital A. You pour this fluid into your transmission. So I said, okay, if I can't push the car to get it started, there's no clutch, how do I get it started? He says, it's a simple program. All you need is a pair of jumper cables. That's how simple it is. And I thought I need a whole bunch of tools and, you know, all kinds of analytical machines. He said, no, jumper cable would be fine. So with the jumper cable, I connect my positive to his positive, my negative to his negative, and guess what? Power can be magically transferred from one vehicle that has the power to a vehicle that don't have any power. And interestingly, is that in a car, the battery is 12 volts. We have 12 step for a 12 volt battery. Then we come to the meetings, right? You know, meetings is very interesting because a lot of times, especially nowadays, it's a place to meet people, you know, who's wearing what yoga pants, you know, and you guys don't wear yoga pants? Okay. I'm from SoCal, okay. Yeah, everybody wear yoga pants. Okay. So, but you meet people, and that's all it literally now become. It's not so much about recovery. So I only go to men's sack, so to try to prevent from all that. My wife is here. That's what she, you know. She check up on me sometimes. So I only go to men's sack, so I'm not distracted. But, you know, you go to a meeting, and in a meeting you figure that, okay, you want happy destiny, you want healthy relationship, you know, and financial security. And it seems like if you go to a meeting, you put your thumb out, somebody will help you. And we think this is like a bus station where you can come in and catch a ride, you know. And I realized that AA in the fellowship, in the meeting rooms, it's not a bus station. As a matter of fact, it's a gas station. What we do here is sell something with a capital G. You can call it God, you can call it gas, you can call it whatever you want to. But you need to put this capital G stuff into your car so that now you have the power to go out to your happy destiny. And guess what? If you're fortunate enough to put another human being in your car, now you can go on a diamond lane. You know, you can go smoother, faster, you know. So make sure you put alcoholic in your car, you know. And and that's really like, you know, what I come up with all this and that. But the idea too is that, you know, if you don't reach out and give back, because it started with me receiving, receiving, receiving. And it comes to a point where you have to make the full circle. You know, it's a triangle and a circle. It's always back to the circle. And the circle is for me to come to a place where I feel, where I actually have more than I need. For a person that is selfish, self-centered, come into a room that everybody self-declared that they are selfish and self-centered, to a place where people are so filled with gifts and miracles in their life that you will find people that are more than willing to give, and they give, and they give, and they give. And they begin to learn the fact that the more they give, the more they receive. So it takes a while for us to truly catch this thing. And service is a big part of it. You know, and I'll tell you one little story. This is about 14 years ago. I got a guy, you know how AA guy is like, hey, this is Dr. George, I got your name. Okay, yeah. What we like to do is invite you to come to Lake Isabella. It's in the middle of nowhere, first of all, you know, like really inviting, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere. and it's a Sunday morning meeting, but we need for you to come Saturday. We have no money to pay for your hotel room. You're going to have to buy dinner on your own. You're going to have to buy your own gas, by the way. And Sunday morning, this is a wonderful breakfast meeting where everybody paid $3. And because you are the speaker, you get a free breakfast. I said, hey, I can't wait to come. You know, I get free breakfast. You know, like. So I was fortunate at this place, which I just talked about, where I can afford to buy my own gas, you know, get my own motel and get my own dinner and drive for hours to go to this place that I've never been to and speak to. And he says, by the way, we're lucky we get about 18 people, you know. He's really encouraging me to come, you know. So I showed up, and then very last minute on the way out the door from my house, her son, which is my stepson, look out from this, you know, video game that he's been at 5 hours, and says, you guys leaving? I said, yeah, we've been telling you. I'm speaking. I've got to go now. He said, can I come along? I said, sure, you know. So we come. And that morning, Sunday morning, this young man stood up in the group of this meeting and declared that he's an alcoholic and he's been good ever since. Now, I'm not saying that I have anything to do with his recovery. What I'm saying is that without knowing what is going to happen, I made a promise to show at some place that literally cannot be in any real way beneficial to Fernando. But I said yes, because I know that if I want the gift of this program, I have to say yes. I cannot be so well that I start saying no. So because I said yes, I was there to witness something that no money can buy. I was able to see this young person, you know, starting to turn his life around, embrace the program, and now, you know, is in a wonderful place. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And part of me is a little mad at him, and I'll tell you why. You know, sometimes you come to AA meeting, right? You know, some guy would say, "Hi, I am John. 6 months ago, I was on Skid Row, and today I'm the president of Bank of America." You know, I said, "Get the hell out," you know? Yeah, you got these people that rocket to, you know, whatever, you know, in no time. So 14 years later, this young man now is the district attorney of Santa Barbara, you know? So, yeah, recovery is amazing, you know, and that is too. And so part of my life was that, you know, I began to really engage with the people that try to help me. And one day I went to a memorial of a wonderful friend that's a, you know, long-term member. And I was, you know, invited by the widow, and I saw a big yellow piece of paper in front of the podium. And I asked her, I said, what's that yellow paper? He said, "You didn't know?" I said, "Of course I didn't know. If I know, I wouldn't ask you." He said, "That is his law degree." I said, "I didn't know he went to law school. How old was he?" He said, "He died when he's 67 years old, but he went back to law school when he was 60. So I thought to myself, 60 years old, he went back to law school. He wasn't looking for a job, you know. He not looking to, like, you know, represent, you know, some famous people. He must have went back to school because he knew that part of his recovery, part of his, you know, to recover what he felt that he has lost because of the distraction of alcohol and drugs, that he really would need to be dying a peaceful man, that he had to go back and get his law degree. And he did that. So at the time I was 40 years old, and look at my own life. I knew I was spot. And all these years when I fill out applications, I was really proud to put down 2 years of college. I was lying. I didn't have 2 years of college. At best, I have 2 years of ping pong in college, you know? So I talked to wife. I said, I got to go back to school. I got to, you know, just for me, let me get an AA degree. I got to get that, you know? And she said, "Sure, go to school." So I went to school, and I did well, and I went to more school. And in the, you know, when I was 50 years old, they put me on the Jumbotron, and I was selected as the most outstanding graduate senior of Cal State Fullerton. And then they gave me a whole bunch of money to go to that fancy college on the west side, you know, by Beverly Hills, if you know where that is. Okay. And so property and prestige got into my head. You know, 2 years later, I was just swollen. I thought I was going to be working with really rich people to help them with their relationship problem. And nothing really happened. Nothing really happened. And it couldn't happen until I got a call. And there was a school, private school, in West Covina. And they want to know if I can substitute one class. Can you come and do one class? I say, "Sure, I'm not doing much anyway." So I show up there, and I walk in the room, and there were 40 people. And they all want to be substance abuse counselor. And I was like, just like, really like the arithmetic, because I know that if I help these 40 people, each and every one of them will be able to help another 40 people, and then another class will come on. And that's how I got into, you know, that profession. And today, you know, I am, you know, really, really blessed to know that many people have had positive impact by me. And I was nobody. I didn't feel even good enough to help myself. But today, people will write in writing. They just write me letters. They write me email. And they're trying to declare that I made an impact. And because of what? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because other people have made that impact in my life. You know, I met this lady when I was early on in recovery. I got this GSR thing, and it's once a month. You go buy literature and chips, and I didn't want to do it because I didn't have a car. That was my best excuse. I don't have a car. And this lady walked up. She said, "I go there too. And if you can get there, I can give you a ride home. I'll meet you halfway." So I said, "Okay, I can get there." So I took the bus. I get there, and she was there. She gave me a ride home. next month I was there, she gave me a ride home. 2-3 months later, we start talking and talking, and next thing you know, I says, what do you do for a living? Because you got this brand new fancy 280Z or something. How do you, you know, afford such a nice car? She said, I don't even work. I said, if you don't work, how do you do it? You know, she said, I'm a SSI, and I didn't know anything about SSI. I said, that's for old people. You're way too young for SSI. But that's when she decided to reveal to me that she was HIV positive. And that really shook me up, because in 1993, anybody that tells you they're HIV positive, that means that they're not gonna stay long. They're gonna die. And I wasn't really worried about her dying. I was worrying about her leaving me. And once again, I have a problem with this God again. God, don't you know I have abandonment issues? You know, my parents left me. These nuns and these priests, they pawned me off to this couple in Long Beach. This couple in Long Beach gave me away, and I'm always with nobody. But then at the time, I always thought of, it's not any of these people. It's really about me, Fernando. I know without a doubt that deep inside of Fernando, there's something so dark, so black, that when people come close and get to know me, they run away. It's me. But this is when this lady was telling me, it says, yeah, I can totally relate with that. I have this disease. When I tell people, they all run away. But you continue to be my friend. I said, I came upon this idea that when I talk to my sponsor and he says, yeah, that's the right way, is that life is about the moments that we have together, not about the memories that we are trying to remember. So as long as we have one day together, that's what is important. I'll spend another day with you, and I hope you stay alive long enough that we have many, many days together. And so I begin to live in the moment. I begin to learn about one day at a time. And it's only because this lady was so courageous to reveal to me one of the things that she normally would not reveal to most any other person. And so lucky today, she's still alive, you know. The medicine of today is so amazing. So I learned from many, many individuals that have come across my path and touched me deep inside here. And I always knew that AA works, but for the longest time, I couldn't explain how AA worked. You know, oftentimes we think, oh yeah, people that memorize the pages, people that can quote pages, people that can do wonderful workshops, people that spawn hundreds and thousands of people, you know, they come down on a helicopter and they got rows of people, you know, and just throwing flowers or something, you know, and that's not AA. To me, AA is this, very simple, that we give each other our most precious prized possession, which is our time. Each and every one of us have a very limited amount of time. If I come here tonight and spend an hour with you, I have given you an hour of my life, which I will never get back, which I don't know how many more hours I have left. But because I am so blessed and so filled with gifts, that I'm willing to give. And I know that at my dying breath, I am committed to continue giving. And guess what? We are a room full of people that used to wouldn't even talk to one another, you know, unless you got some dope, unless you got some alcohol, you know. We ain't gonna be like, you know, we are people that do not mingle, you know, as we say in the book. And we share, you know. So AA is like the banquet of life, just like the buffet you had earlier, you know, potluck, you know. And we bring out dishes, you know. Some of us bring the main dish, some of us bring dessert, some of us bring salads, appetizers, some of us bring drinks, but we all bring something of ourselves and put it on the table there. And today we had a wonderful meal. We break bread together and we share as a family. That's the amazing part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you think that AA is just about stopping drinking, you are selling yourself so short. And I would quote Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson wrote it like it was biblical. Men will pick up their beds and walk again. Like he's talking about Lazarus rising from the dead, you know? So that is so amazing that you come in because you have a little substance problem, and then you're going to end up with a beautiful life. And all we have to do is to follow some simple directions, walk the path, of the people that have gone in front of us, because they are reaching us back and helping us, and we are reaching back and helping others. And that's a circle of life. You know, it's literally unity, service, and recovery. You know, that's the triangle. The triangle is literally, I put my hand with another human being, and that formed the baseline of the triangle. If I reach up, and that other person reach up, now we form a triangle, and we have God on top. So it's human to human before we can get to God. And that is in the second step. For the longest time, I thought the second step was about God. You know, I didn't like God, didn't really work well. And my sponsor said, where does it say God? Underline the word God on step two. And I couldn't. I said, I know what you mean. A power greater than myself. I know you're talking about God, but it doesn't say God. So come up with an idea that is a power greater than yourself alone. Oh, that was hard. But I remember that I took algebra in high school. And in algebra, a power greater than X is equal to X plus 1. A power greater than me is Fernando with another human being. Connect with that human being. And if I can connect with one human being, like it's put out on the fifth step, and in a world of 80 billion people, I'm from China, we got nothing but people, okay? And if I can connect with one person, it speaks volumes about me rather than the actions that we have to take. So this is where it's at, you know? And so I went on in my life, and today I'm really blessed. Today, let's put it this way. Last year I turned 25. I had like people show up I couldn't even believe, you know? My first days, people that know me, you know, and they took the time. That's when I really feel appreciated, that when people not only drove miles, took time in the middle of their day to come and say hi, to come and say thanks, to come and say, hey, good work. And then this year it happens again. And that's when I feel that, wow, I always thought that what I do go unrecognized. It is recognized. I touch people. It's not a pride thing. It's just that what I do. And if I touch 10 people, talk to 10 people in this meeting, hopefully I can reach one person. So it's just odd. So you go to 10,000 meetings, you know, hopefully you touch a few people, you know? And so year after year, days after days, we become a person that begin to now understand the power that is within this room. And I was listening to a friend last weekend, and he said it really, really interesting. He said, this whole program starts with one person deciding to go into a hospital and not his first time. It's probably his third time to try to get sober. And because of that desire and because of that action, he got sober. And then he got, you know, the fever, and he went and talked about the white light experience and scared the heck out of everybody, and he couldn't get anybody else sober. And he was ready to give up when his wife says, but you are still sober. You are sober longer than you have ever been. And he said, yeah. Then he went back to the doctor that helped him, and the doc says, don't talk about the white light thing. Talk about your drinking. Talk about your suffering. Talk about your pain. Talk about your feelings. And then when he ended up in Akron, Ohio, he had this test. And all every one of us as alcoholic at one time faced this kind of making the decision. You know, there was this noise, tinkling, piano playing, you know, whatever it was, kind of right over there in the bar. And it was hopeless. He lost the proxy fight, you know, and he knew he was going to drink. But he also knew that if he find himself an alcoholic, he's going to be okay. So he made the decision to find another alcoholic. Imagine what would happen. We wouldn't be here tonight if he decided to take a drink. But he went to the phone booth. He called. And according to legend, I don't know how true that is, he very last dime, he reached a guy that hooked him up with an alcoholic. And guess what? On Mother's Day, tomorrow, Dr. Bob showed up in this room and he told his wife, I'll give this guy 15 minutes. You know how we are, alcoholic, you know? Yeah. I'll please the wife, but 15 minutes, you know, then I'm out of here, you know? And him and Bill Wilson ending up talking for hours. And that's where we come from. You know, we didn't come from, you know, Dr. Phil. We didn't come from Oprah, you know. We didn't come from some doctor with a bunch of degrees. We came from two alcoholics, desperate in their lives, trying to save each other. And they formed this bond, and then they got the third guy, and then we are here. We're worldwide, you know. And I am part of that family, you know. And today, I am so happy to be here and meet new friends and share with you that, you know, a Chinese little boy that is a half-breed that didn't feel like he belonged, today feel absolutely comfortable in the rooms of AA. You know why? Because I know today that the Portuguese side of me drank all the wine and the Chinese side of me smoked all the opium. So I'm welcome here, you know? You forgot about opium, right? Our natural drug of choice, okay? So I'm here because I know that by coming here, just opening up my life and sharing you about my life, and hopefully some part of it will touch you, and hopefully that will help you to touch somebody else. You know, we put it out and we expect it to go somewhere else. You know, we don't expect direct reaction. Because if I give you something and you give me something back, that's what we call a transaction. I give you a dollar, you give me a loaf of bread. I give you a dollar, you give me an ice cream or something. That's a transaction. There's no love in it. But if I give you something and it never comes back, but it keep on going and going and going and going and going, and we believe that we put some positive vibes out there, it may take months, it may take years, but I believe that somewhere, somehow, that positive vibe and energy will come back to me. And I believe that's how my life is more blessed today than it ever been. And I notice my time is kind of up, so I will close, and I always close with this. This is how I see how the rooms of alcoholics and the meetings of alcoholics and the program of alcoholics is. I am like a candle born lit in life, and somewhere along life, a wind blew and my light went out, and I was cold and I was dark until I arrived in these rooms, and I noticed all of you were candles that were lit. And one of you came up to me and said to me that if I allow myself to get close to him and for him to be close to me, that's how we candles light one another. And I was fortunate. I was able to get close to him and he was able to get close to me. And once again, my flame was lit. But I was warned not to be stagnant, that I need to go out into the dark and search for other candles in the dark and let them know that if I can get close to them and they can get close to me, that's how we candles light one another. And my dream tonight is simply this, that I light enough candles and they in turn light enough candles that our flames together will be as bright as daylight. Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's give Fernando another round of applause.